Good evening. A dogfight in the House over impeachment. The Speaker says he made us do it.
He gave us no choice.
As Democrats make the case, the president's dealing with Ukraine are impeachable.
To my colleagues on both sides of the aisle, I appeal to your patriotism and implore you to defend free and fair elections and preserve the Constitution. God save the United States of America.
And the Senate sends the Space Force to Trump for his signature. With these and other stories, I'm Paul D'Arienzo with the WBAI News for Wednesday, December 18th, 2019. First to these news headlines with Linda Perry.
Thanks, Paul. Despite opposition from a broad citywide coalition of progressive grassroots organizations and protests from strap hangers, MTA board members voted today to approve its $18 billion budget, which includes the hiring of 500 additional officers. The new police hires will cost the MTA $250 million over the next 4 years. One board member who voted against the budget, David Jones, said there's a built-up problem here of over-enforcement in poor neighborhoods. As for the 500 new hires, it seems as if they will be doing broken window policing, cracking down on fare evasions and so-called quality of life concerns. In other news, New York Governor Andrew Cuomo plans to create a commission to investigate the potential benefits of importing prescription drugs from Canada. The Drug Importation Panel is part of a three-part prescription drug plan Cuomo announced today. The plan also includes a proposal to cap insulin copayments at $100 a month for people who are insured. And Cuomo wants to let the State Department of Financial Services investigate spikes in prescription drug prices. The governor has been rolling out pieces of his 2020 State of the State address each day leading up to the end of the year. In California, Bernie Sanders and Michael Bloomberg are making their broadest effort so far to win the state. It's the biggest prize in the Democratic presidential primary. Sanders has hired 80 staff members to knock on doors and organize volunteers to promote his message of political revolution. Bloomberg is spending millions of dollars to flood TV screens with ads, but the former New York mayor won't be one of the seven candidates who gathered Thursday in Los Angeles for the sixth and final debate of 2019. Bloomberg is unable to qualify for the contest because he is not accepting campaign donations. And Ruth Bader Ginsburg, Justice Ginsburg, is maintaining a schedule as active as any of her younger Supreme Court colleagues, this despite being treated for cancer twice in the past year. She said she's feeling fine in one of the three public appearances this week. The frail-looking liberal icon may be the only thing standing between President Donald Trump and his opportunity to name a third justice to the Supreme Court. However, she appears to be making few concessions to her health. Still, it's reasonable for her fans to wonder, shouldn't Ginsburg be taking it easy if her goal is to outlast Trump's presidency? And police say a crash involving a wrong-way driver claimed two lives on Long Island. The collision occurred around 10 p.m. last night on Sunrise Highway in Southampton. Westbound lanes in the area were closed for more than 8 hours as a result. And finally, Governor Andrew Cuomo is urging New Yorkers to prepare for snow squalls causing whiteout conditions and freezing temperatures as a strong Arctic cold front is currently moving across the state and will drive temperatures below freezing this evening into Thursday. State agencies remain on alert and are prepared to assist communities with response operation in the event wind or ice cause damage. New Yorkers are urged to pay close attention to local weather reports throughout the coming days, and motorists should also travel carefully as snow squalls will impact visibility and crosswinds may make driving difficult. Back over to you, Paul.
Thanks, Linda. Debate continues on House in the House on impeaching President Trump, leading to a rare nighttime vote that's expected tonight on the two articles of impeachment. The vote may occur even as President as the president addresses a rally in Battle Creek, Michigan, affording him the opportunity to respond in real time. But Trump's angry six-page letter delivered yesterday, bashing the process and declaring House Democrats were violating their oath of office, did nothing to deter Speaker Nancy Pelosi. Republicans tried various delaying tactics this morning, but Pelosi eventually had her way.
Every day, all across America, children in school, members of the military, officials, and those civically engaged also pledge allegiance to the flag. Let us recall what that pledge says. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. The republic for which it stands is what we are here to talk about today, a republic if we can keep it. We gather today under the dome of this temple of democracy to exercise one of the most solemn powers that this body can take, the impeachment of the President of the United States. No member, regardless of party or politics, comes to Congress to impeach a president. But every one of us, as our first act as a member of Congress, stood on this historic House floor before our beautiful American flag and raised our hands in this sacred oath. I do solemnly swear that I will support and defend the Constitution of the United States against all enemies, foreign and domestic. So help me God. For 230 years, members have taken that sacred oath, which makes us custodians of the Constitution. When our founders declared independence and established a new nation, they crafted a system of government unlike one ever seen before, a republic, starting with the sacred words, "We the people." For centuries, Americans have fought and died to defend democracy for the people. But, very sadly now, our founders' vision of a republic is under threat from actions from the White House. That is why today, as Speaker of the House, I solemnly and sadly open the debate on the impeachment of the President of the United States. If we do not act now, we would be derelict in our duty. It is tragic that the President's reckless actions make impeachment necessary. He gave us no choice.
Roughly alternating, Republicans and Democrats then began their debate. New York's own Representative Hakeem Jeffries.
George Washington, in his farewell address to the nation, counseled America that the Constitution is sacredly obligatory upon all. It is in that spirit that we proceed today. Donald Trump pressured a foreign government to target an American citizen for political gain and at the same time withheld without justification $391 million in military aid to a vulnerable Ukraine as part of a scheme to solicit foreign interference in an American election. That is unacceptable. That is unconscionable. That is unconstitutional. There are some who cynically argue that the impeachment of this president will further divide an already fractured union. But there is a difference between division and clarification. Slavery once divided the nation, but emancipators rose up to clarify that all men are created equally. Suffrage once divided the nation, but women rose up to clarify that all voices must be heard in our democracy. Jim Crow once divided the nation, but civil rights champions rose up to clarify that all are entitled to equal protection under the law. There is a difference between division and clarification. We will hold this president accountable for his stunning abuse of power. We will hold this president accountable for undermining our national security. We will hold this president accountable for corrupting our democracy. We will impeach Donald John Trump. We will clarify that in America, no one is above the law.
But California's Tom McClintock said impeachment of Trump would set the stage for future instability as the GOP would look for vindication by impeaching a Democrat, prompting Judiciary Chair Gerald Nadler to respond.
Even in this kangaroo court, the Democrats' hand-picked witnesses provided no firsthand knowledge the president leaked aid to action. In fact, two witnesses provided firsthand knowledge that he specifically ordered no quid pro quo. Any case that charged no actual crime and offered no legally admissible evidence would be laughed out of court in a heartbeat. That's the case before us today. It would redefine the grounds for impeachment in such a way that assures that it will become a constant presence in our national life. Now we know just how reckless is the Democrats' chant of resist by any means necessary. This is a stunning abuse of power and a shameless travesty of justice that will stain the reputations of those responsible for generations to come. I yield back.
Gentleman yields back.
Reserve.
Gentleman reserves. Mr. Nadler.
Mr. Speaker, abuse of power was no vague or weak notion to the framers. It had a very specific meaning, the use of official power to obtain an improper personal benefit while ignoring or injuring the national interest. President Trump has abused his office and must be removed.
A memorable moment came from Louisiana Republican Clay Higgins, a state trooper who once apologized for filming a pro-gun selfie at the Auschwitz death camp.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I have descended into the belly of the beast. I have witnessed the terror within, and I rise committed to oppose the insidious forces which threaten our republic. America is being severely injured by this betrayal, by this unjust and weaponized impeachment brought upon us by the same socialists who threaten unborn life in the womb, who threaten First Amendment rights of conservatives, who threaten Second Amendment protections of every American patriot, and who have long ago determined that they would organize and conspire to overthrow President Trump. We don't face this horror because the Democrats have all of a sudden become constitutionalists. We're not being devoured from within because of some surreal assertion of the socialists' newfound love for the very flag that they trod upon. We face this horror because of this map. This is what the Democrats fear. They fear the true will of we, the people. They are deep establishment D.C. They fear. They call this Republican map flyover country. They call us deplorables. They fear our faith. They fear our strength. They fear our unity. They fear our vote. And they fear our president. We will never surrender our nation to career establishment D.C. politicians and bureaucrats. Our republic shall survive this threat from within. American patriots shall prevail. Mr. Speaker, I yield.
Higgins made his speech in front of a large map showing the Trump-supporting parts of the United States in red and the much smaller but concentrated urban areas where the Democrats won in blue. And that he showed as proof that most of the United States was Trump country. Now, Georgia Democrat Hank Johnson responded.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I was not among those who supported impeachment before Ukraine, but I call for impeachment today because our president is, as we speak, abusing his power and placing himself above the law. President Trump's attempt to sabotage the 2020 election is a clear and present danger on our democracy. We the people know this, and more Americans support impeachment today than at any time since Richard Nixon's final weeks in office. We know that it's wrong to enlist the help of foreigners in interfering in our elections. We know it's wrong to cheat. And we know what's at stake. It's not just that our elections were attacked. Our elections are under attack right now.
But conservatives kept their drumbeat up. The proceedings were a travesty meant to undo the 2016 election.
Mr. Speaker, our founders intentionally did not embrace recalls or votes of no confidence. Rather, we demand from Congress evidence of high crimes and misdemeanors. While my colleagues are free to dislike the president, and while they may reasonably view the infamous phone call and negotiations with the Ukrainians as something less than perfect, they are not free to impeach something less than a high crime and misdemeanor. In just over 10 months, though, the people are free to decide, and we should let them. The eyes of the world are upon us, Madam Speaker. The press galleries are full. Our floor is filled with members. When will we give the world something better than this? Today in Mexico, a young girl will be abused while being trafficked toward our open borders, while some here yell kids in cages and play race politics in the false name of compassion. Today in New York, a young mother will be coerced into abortion by taxpayer-funded Planned Parenthood, while we allow the genocide of the unborn in the false name of choice. Today, across America, diabetics will struggle to afford insulin due to a healthcare system ravaged by government and insurance bureaucrats empowered in the false name of coverage. And today, our children inherit $100 million of debt an hour, borrowed in the false name of what government can provide. In this conduct by Congress failing to do its jobs, that should be impeached. And one might ask if America would be better off taking the first 435 names out of the phone book to represent us in the United States House than what is on display here today. Today is not a dark day, because the American people know this. America is great, Washington is broken, and we're taking our country back.
And in a moment of dramatic flair, Intelligence Committee Chair Adam Schiff took the gavel from Nadler and demanded Trump be removed.
They have made their choice, and I believe they will rue the day that they did. When Donald J. Trump was sworn in on January 20th, 2017, he repeated these words. I do solemnly swear that I will faithfully execute the office of the President of the United States, and will, to the best of my ability, preserve, protect, and defend the Constitution of the United States. Has he lived up to that sacred obligation? Has he honored his oath of office? Has he preserved, protected, and defended the Constitution of the United States? The uncontested evidence provides the simple yet tragic answer: he has not. In America, no one is above the law. Donald J. Trump sacrificed our national security in an effort to cheat in the next election. And for that, and his continued efforts to seek foreign interference in our elections, he must be impeached. I reserve the balance of my time.
Meanwhile, Trump, tweeting from the White House, used all capital letters and exclamation points to register his outrage. Such atrocious lies by the radical left do nothing. Democrats, this is an assault on America and an assault on the Republican Party. Speaking at a Workers for Trump event in Saginaw, Michigan, Vice President Pence called the House impeachment of President Trump a disgrace.
Today's vote in the House of Representatives is a disgrace, and it sets a dangerous precedent for our country. And I remember when Nancy Pelosi said months ago she would never bring impeachment unless it was overwhelming, compelling, and bipartisan. And as already is unfolding on Capitol Hill today, the only bipartisan vote will be a vote against the articles of impeachment against President Trump.
Few lawmakers are crossing party lines, and those who do face consequences. One freshman Democrat, Jeff Van Drew of New Jersey, has indicated he will switch parties to become a Republican after opposing impeachment. Earlier this year, Michigan conservative Representative Justin Amash left the GOP when he favored impeachment. One Democrat, Joe Kennedy III of Massachusetts, read a letter to his young children explaining his vote to impeach. "This is a moment you will read about in your history books," he told them. And you're listening to the news on the locally produced WBAI News. I'm Paul DiRienzo. On Tuesday, the United States Senate passed the 2020 Defense Authorization Bill. The $737 billion appropriation includes a provision creating a new Space Force branch of the Armed Services. Concurrently, it also provides all federal workers with 12 weeks of paid paternal leave for the first time in American history. Federal military leave is considered a pet project of Trump advisor and first daughter Ivanka Trump and her husband Jared Kushner. The Space Force would be a branch of the U.S. military housed within the Air Force. Bruce Gagnon is coordinator of the Global Network Against Weapons and Nuclear Power in Space. He says the U.S. Space Force will invite an arms race above the Earth.
Faster. First, for the economy, the Pentagon has long been saying that Star Wars, moving the arms race into space, would be the largest industrial project in the history of the planet Earth. And they say they've identified a funding source. They say it's the entitlement programs, which officially are Medicare, Medicaid, Social Security, and what's left of the tattered social safety net. And then also, it's a very provocative step to essentially say to Russia and China and other spacefaring nations that we're going to control space, we the U.S., we're going to dominate space, and we're going to deny other countries access to space. That language is in the U.S. Space Command planning document called Vision for 2020. The Democrats, who control the House, could have stopped this thing dead in water. Their only criticism of it was they wanted to call it the Space Corps rather than the Space Force. That was it. That's all they had to say.
Sounds like the 1950s. They wanted to make it one of those TV shows that baby boomers grew up watching.
I guess so, but
the cadet, space cadet.
If you start having a war in space, what you do is you create a cascading effect of space junk. I organized a protest at the Kennedy Space Center in 1989, and Apollo astronaut Edgar Mitchell, the sixth man to walk on the moon, was there speaking out against the weaponization of space. He said, if we ever have a war in space, it'll be the one and only, because there will be so much debris created by blowing up satellites and other things that it will create this cascading effect, and soon down here on the Earth, cell phones, cable TV, ATM machines, traffic signals, power grid, everything that's hooked up to space technology today, GPS, all the way down the line, everything shuts down. And that then we would have a minefield of debris orbiting the Earth, and we'd literally be entombed to the planet. We wouldn't be able to get a rocket off the planet Earth. So this whole idea is insane. I call it the bad seed, carrying the bad seed of war and greed and environmental degradation that we've planted into the depths of this Earth below. They now want to carry it into space.
How would they prevent other countries from launching rockets into space?
There was a congressional study called Military Space Forces the Next 50 Years, created in 1989 and ultimately published as a book. Senators John Glenn, Bill Nelson from Florida, they signed this study, endorsed it. And it said that we've got to think of the Earth-Moon gravity well. Imagine a wishing well. Someone's down inside the bottom of it. You're at the top. You can keep them from getting out, basically. And they said with U.S. space stations armed on either side of the moon, we would control the Earth-Moon gravity well, and we would be able to control who gets on and off the planet. And that's why there's a rush now to control the moon and have bases on the moon. And this is a very dangerous period we're in right now, and it's really, again, going to cost a whole lot of money. There won't be money left for anything else, literally.
How is Trump's plan different from Reagan's strategic defense initiative?
Not really much different at all. The technology is more advanced today, obviously, after all these years and all these hundreds and hundreds of billions of dollars that have been pumped into research and development. But ultimately, it's the same goal, U.S. control and domination of space and the Earth below. They call it, at the Space Command, full spectrum dominance. Control the planet Earth.
And what would be the response from the other countries like Russia and China and even North Korea, you know, wanting to send rockets into space and beyond maybe this gravity well you're talking about?
Well, for the last 25 or more years, Russia and China and Canada have been annually going to the United Nations submitting a treaty to ban all weapons in space. Let's close the door to the barn before the horse gets out. The U.S., through Republican and Democrat administrations, have refused to participate in that treaty. So I think that what's driving it is the profits. The weapons corporations are salivating at the thought of the profits they can make from moving the arms race into the heavens.
And where does this go? What's the next thing that happens?
Next thing that happens is they move it forward. Things get worse. The tension increases. The challenges to Russia and China and other nations who have any hopes and dreams of going into space become greater. They have to consider, do we match this technology? Do we let the United States become the master of space? The slogan that they wear on their uniform patch at the U.S. Space Command and that sits above the doorway at Schriever Air Force Base in Colorado Springs.
Masters of Space. Bruce Gagnon is coordinator of the Global Network Against Weapons and Nuclear Power in Space. He says the U.S. Space Force will invite an arms race. Author and researcher Carl Grossman has an article on the new Space Force on the website counterpunch.org. He says the Space Force is a violation of a half-century-old treaty barring nuclear weapons in space and goes against calls for a new treaty to ban all weapons from outer space.
The Outer Space Treaty of 67 prohibits the placement of weapons of mass destruction in space. And for now decades, there's been an effort by China, by Russia, and our neighbor Canada to expand the Outer Space Treaty to bar not just weapons of mass destruction, but all weapons in space. And I've been at the United Nations to see what occurs when this effort, it's under what's called the PAROS, or the Prevention of an Arms Race in Outer Space Treaty, comes up for a vote. And what occurs is that our country, the United States, casts a no vote and essentially vetoes the PAROS Treaty. I mean, it's utterly outrageous, and it's occurred under both Republican presidents and Democratic presidents.
What kind of power does that give in outer space to the Pentagon?
What this National Defense Authorization Act says is we recognize space as a war-fighting domain, despite the Outer Space Treaty of 1967. And it goes on, we would create a space force.
Would it be like Star Wars? Would there be spacecraft from Russia and the United States blasting each other with lasers? Is that what we're about?
Inevitably. What would occur now is that you'd have this new, like the Marines, the Army, the Navy, this new separate service, a U.S. Armed Service, the Space Force. They would move up into space. That's what Reagan's Star Wars plan was all about, to weaponize space.
Is this more of Star Wars or is something different?
This is Star Wars. It's an encore of the Reagan Star Wars plan.
So it's that robots and satellites in space shooting lasers at each other to try and make it easier for nuclear weapons, or to try and intercept nuclear weapons, things like that.
Reagan claimed that we need what he called a strategic defense initiative to defend the United States in terms of launches of missiles and so forth and so on. Trump is saying something else. What Trump is saying is that, but he said this over and over again, that it's not enough to merely have American presence in space, we must have American dominance in space. Again, dominance in space. What Trump wants is for this one country, the United States, to dominate the planet from space, to control the planet from the ultimate ground of space. And China and Russia and the world is not going to stand for that, so inevitably there'll be other countries going up there militarily.
Author and researcher Carl Grossman has an article on the new Space Force on the website counterpunch.org. And that's some of the news for Wednesday, December 18th, 2019. The news was produced with Linda Perry. Our engineer is Reggie Johnson. For the WBAI News, I'm Paul D'Arienzo.